listening to Omaha Sports Insider with Joe Quinn and Nick Handley. Your calls are welcome at 402-573-0590. Now, here's Joe and Nick.
Man, you know, TJ, your little video, your little audio clip there inspired me to do a little further research on this. So, I guess Lori Loughlin's daughter, Olivia, is that her name? Olivia Jade. She is a very popular YouTuber.
Oh, okay. So she's got a following.
YouTube star.
Yes.
She actually had to post an apology video for the for the clip. For the clip that you just played. She issued an apology saying, sorry, she said, let's see, I said something super ignorant and stupid, basically, and it totally came across, and I'm ungrateful for college. I'm going to a really nice school, and it kind of made it just seem like I don't care. I just want to brush it off. I'm just going to be successful at YouTube and not have to worry about school, she said in the video. Oh. I'm really disappointed in myself.
So she's not going to even...
God, how much...
She's not even going to approach school. She's just going to make a living on YouTube.
How much better does it make this now knowing that her mom had to write a giant check to illegally get her into school?
A school that she will not be attending.
A school that she really doesn't seem to care about all that much.
Well, didn't she just say she wants to just be on YouTube? She's not going to worry about school?
God.
She's going to make her money on YouTube, baby. Like, first of all, I want to know how many, I get, you know what, never mind. I can answer my own question. I was just going to say, how many people would actually want to see what Olivia Loughlin has to say about anything, yet there are millions of people who watch The Bachelor in that pile of garbage. So I guess there's always an audience for some crap out there.
Yeah.
So she probably will be ridiculously successful being an idiot. So good for you.
This video has been watched 822,000 times.
I can only imagine the comments too. I'm sure the majority of them are.
There are 1.9 million people that subscribe to her YouTube channel, Nick. 1.9 million people apparently care what Olivia Jade has to say.
With you people?
Yeah, kind of like how you guys don't understand all this whole Twitch video gaming streaming, like how huge it is.
Huh?
It's like, I mean, what? This is just
what?
Like this.
Oh, wait, okay, hold on. Back up.
I can totally appreciate.
What? You guys say shit all the time.
How do you watch people play video games? Let me finish.
I don't even know what this...
let me finish. Now, Lori Loughlin is my girl. We've gone to Thanksgivings together. Now, having said that, what is wrong with your daughter? Okay, no, let me say this. The e-gaming thing, yes, I find to be a joke. But to compare it to the, how was it, 1.7 million? Is that what you said? 1.7 million followers on this YouTube channel?
1.9.
Jeez, even worse. Like, I'll put e-gaming right up there with the most elite college football competition to people who actually follow. How old is she, like 17, 18?
No, she's a freshman at USC, so okay, 19.
To follow a 19-year-old, and you just got a clip there of the thing she has to say about school.
I'm going to...
Why would you? I mean, like, how is this entertaining?
I'm
going
to go out on a limb here and say that at least, Nick, half the people that follow her, she looks just like Lori Loughlin did back when she was on Full House. It's probably a bunch of creepy old dudes.
Full House Nation.
It's probably a bunch of creepy, like, middle-aged single dudes who are following her because she looks like her mother when she was on Full House.
Full House Nation, baby.
And... Oh, get this. Oh, here, man, this is good stuff.
Has John Stamos weighed in on this? Because that
there's a lot better things
that
to
was
view
his wife
this.
In Full House. He cannot be happy with what's going
on.
No,
TJ, this is good stuff. This is quality stuff. So
I lost my mind watching this for 10 minutes.
I know. 10 minutes, I'd be willing
to. TJ's usually a very very calm, very collected person.
One day ago, she posted a video that was called New Season, New Clothes, Try On Haul. By Olivia Jade. 250,000 people have watched this. Here's the inscription. Hi, babies. I hope you enjoy this Urban Outfitters try-on clothing haul.
Oh, my gosh.
Hi, babies.
And it's her trying on clothes for... let's see how long this video is.
People, get a life.
I'm sorry, but, you know, if you're a creepy old man...
I want to see what she's
this wearing. Is 10 minutes and 55 seconds of her trying on clothes.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, I think it's got to be more teenage girls who are following her who want to be her than creepy old guys. Like, I don't doubt creepy old guys are following her, but come on.
I would say the majority are people like her.
1.9 million.
And 1.9 million of those people exist.
1.9 million jerks in the world are following Lori Loughlin's daughter on Twitter.
Is this why some other countries hate us?
She's trying on clothes.
For sure.
She's trying. I mean, It's not even, she just holds up the clothes that she bought. It's basically her coming home from a shopping trip where I'm
Who
sure.
Who wants to see what I bought?
Financed entirely by the full house money.
Oh my gosh.
It's her pulling things out of a bag. That's it.
Who wants to see my new romper? Come on, guys.
That's all it is. It's her pulling stuff out of a shopping bag.
Even Kawhi finds it ridiculous.
And 1.9 million people tune in to watch this. Yes, this is why other countries hate us.
You know what? For all of the things I say about the gaming and the esports, y'all ain't that bad. Y'all ain't that bad because this is the true problem with our country. Not esports. This right here, the fact that 1.9 million
and 1.3 on Instagram
will follow this fraud, this wannabe student, this total imposter.
I've moved on to blinging on a budget.
Oh, blinging on a budget.
I'm telling you, man, there's going to be a bunch of creepy old dudes who are going to want to watch this because it's her like in a bikini top trying on earrings and stuff. She's 19.
Oh, gosh.
She's 19. It's creepy.
Like, I'm not even...
It's all creepy. And now how is she going to react?
I'm shifting my anger towards the 1.9 followers, not as much on her because, hey, if you got something and it seems to work, you know, why get rid of it?
How are people going to react for 1.9 million followers? Actually, how is she going to react when she finds out, because maybe she knew, maybe she didn't, that her mom and dad, like, literally cheated to get her into college?
Let's be real. Just listening to, and maybe don't judge a book by its cover. Let's be real. Just listening to that, I have a feeling not only did she know, but she probably insisted that her parents do this.
I could see somebody standing there like this, not necessarily her, but somebody in her shoes standing there. You know, she's got all these college admissions, like Veruca Salt in Willy Wonka. Think about it like that. But I want to go to USC now!
Yeah.
You want me to replay it for the audience?
Please, yes, please. Let's have the clip of her talking about how she really isn't interested in actually going to school.
That's her work. So I don't know how much of school I'm going to attend, but I'm going to go in and talk to my deans and everyone and hope that I can try and balance it all. But I do want the experience of like game days, partying. I don't really care about school, as you guys all know. Are you in?
So she's going to go in and talk to her deans and find out how little class can I go to?
And what school is this? This was
USC.
USC, okay.
I mean, Nick, we joke about USC and, like, you know, kind of their football team sucking.
If I'm Lynn Swann, I'm saying no. You have place at our games.
USC is, what, probably a top 25 school nationally? Yeah. I mean, from the academic side of things, I mean, it's not an easy one to get into, so.
Poor USC. This is going to make people hate them even more.
Gosh. Eh, people hate USC as it is enough.
I'm just saying.
I don't know this is going to necessarily hate it even more. Because, I mean, we got to be fair.
But I mean, it's LA. This is so LA.
UCLA is involved in this, too. Stanford's involved in it. Yale, Georgetown, Wake Forest, the University of San Diego. Who paid a $100,000 bribe to get their kid into San Diego? Like, that's what I want to know. Texas is involved in this, which is awesome. That's fine.
Hook 'em.
Hook 'em horns, baby.
I'm not a big fan of her. But the 1.9 followers on this thing.
1.9 million?
Yeah. Not a fan of that. Like, even more angry about that. Like, I seriously do. I want to apologize to any e-sport person that I may have offended by saying, I don't think you should be getting a scholarship for doing that. Nope. Take that one back. Because people like this are getting admission into, and mind you, through bribes, but are getting admission to USC and to Stanford. Into Yale.
She went on to say,
I'm sorry for everything I ever said about esports because the 1.9 million followers on something like this is truly what is wrong with our society.
She also went on to say, by the way, she's sorry for anyone she offended by saying that. I know it's a privilege and a blessing, and I'm really grateful.
Do you, though? Do you really?
Is it really a privilege to be a student at USC, or did mommy and daddy write a nice big fat check?
Or let's be real. Maybe not a mom and dad, her publicist. She probably has one now. She probably does for doing nothing, for being a mediocre to below average student and being blessed with money in her family.
This People, by the way, like when you get involved with celebrities like this, like you got to go to like People Magazine to read about all the stuff involving them. Like that's where I found the links
TMZ
to these videos.
TMZ had to have this, right?
They had at the bottom of the article, Olivia Jade is not currently listed on the USC women's rowing roster.
Oh, dang it.
Really?
Talk about the increase of fans for the USC rowing team. if she was indeed on the roster.
Well, which way would you rather go? Because it sounds
got
like
1.9 followers on your YouTube.
Nick, it sounds like
1.9 mil.
You know, if you're you have filthy rich and you have enough money to get your kid into whatever school you want, you had two options. You could either go the, you know, bribe the ACT administrator essentially to help your kid cheat, or you could do the, you know, fake like an athletic prowess to try and bribe the coach to get you into school. Which route would you rather go? I mean, both of them are going to land you in prison just the same, I guess. So
I think the ACT thing, I would never want to be an imposter student athlete. Like, I have too much respect for that.
I'd rather cheat on the ACT?
Yeah, I'd rather just go full-fledged cheating on the ACT, because those, I mean, we know those tests are bogus anyway.
And hey.
You have a bad Saturday morning, and it doesn't necessarily reflect
on you know what kind of pops
kind of
into my mind? Have you ever seen the movie, it was with Christopher Walken and Frank Abagnale, Catch Me If You Can.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, where, you know, Tom Hanks is like, how'd you do it, Frank? How'd you cheat on the bar in Louisiana? It's like, I didn't cheat.
I didn't cheat.
I studied for 2 weeks, and I passed.
And I passed it.
That is not what happened here.
No.
That is not at all what happened
like
here.
This isn't like behind all of this bribery and scandal, there's a beautiful mind at work.
No.
This is, I mean, it's dollars and cents. There's no beautiful mind at work. There was a following of Full House, and now the recreation of Fuller House. Aunt Becky is still probably living off of that.
Well, she was in the new one for a hot second, wasn't she?
Yeah. So, yeah, she's getting the residual checks on that. And unfortunately, her daughter is a very unpleasant person. But yet 1.9 million people follow her on this YouTube channel of watching her shop and showing you what she bought.
And 1.3 million on Instagram.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, seriously. This is, I mean, we can talk about all the different things that we deem to be sort of lazy, like the esports again. I feel really bad forever, ever looking down on esport gaming people because this is a bad look. This is not good.
Well, there we go. Now you're all caught up on the latest corruption scandal involving college admissions with a little bit of a flavor of a college sports tie-in.
Yeah, really one of the heartwarming students that was unfortunately impacted.
Well,
we all feel very sorry for... What's her name? Olivia Loughlin. We really feel sorry for her.
Jade is what she goes by. Jade. I think it's Loughlin's husband's last name. He's apparently a fashion designer of some sorts.
Oh, wow, that makes sense. I mean, Olivia Jade. You're such a victim in this. I know. My heart goes out to you.
I know. All right. Coming up next, we're going to talk to Chris Hedy, Omaha World Herald, Nebraska basketball as they get set to play in the Big Ten tournament tomorrow afternoon, right here on AM 590.
ESPN tomorrow. All right, we haven't even got to the big Nebraska basketball news. And we are, by the way, going to be talking about this injury in a little bit with Travis Manners, Athletes Training Center, in our rehab report. Meniscus injuries. Amir Harris will be out likely for the Big Ten tournament with a meniscus injury. Not really detailed on that. So that's going on. Nebraska, though, still kind of catching their breath from what was a pretty remarkable comeback Sunday at Pinnacle Bank Arena. Chris Hedy covering the Huskers for the Omaha World Herald. Chris, I want to start out with this. There was a time, and I didn't get a chance to see this game. I was in an airport in Dallas and seeing all the reaction. And I felt like all of a sudden the media narrative really shifted to Tim Miles, maybe more so than the players. I wasn't a big fan of that. And I'm curious maybe why you see it as Tim Miles kind of grabbing the headlines on that one, as opposed to maybe like guys like Johnny Trueblood and some of the actual players that really were a huge part of that 16-point comeback.
Well, I think that if you look back at Mike Riley's last game at Memorial Stadium, I mean, it was about him. It was kind of a similar situation. Mm-hmm. I mean, both against Iowa, actually. But I think that there's kind of some writing on the wall that this is probably his last game at Pinnacle Bank Arena, which kind of made the evening and the game that much more crazy, I think. Because Johnny played okay. Like, he didn't have any points, but he had a plus 18, and that was cool. And, you know, Nebraska kind of scrounged from behind. And it was really, it was really cool to watch, and the, comeback was really great. But it would just be kind of another game, I think, if there wasn't this added element of this could have been potentially Tim Miles' last home game. Like, I think that if this was 2 years ago, it would have just been like, well, they won, and that was cool. Now they're 16-15,
yeah,
and it kind of ends there. And there's just some dramatic effect that's added because, if Miles ends up getting fired, then that was his last game. And that means something because I think that's, it just adds more fuel to the fire. And also because, fans stayed afterwards to talk to him and say hi. And applaud him as he went off. And to ignore that fact and just kind of keep going was, you know, it was interesting that maybe how his tenure ends at Pinnacle Bank Arena, especially because there were moments like that throughout his tenure. Notre Sunday and some other, the Creighton game. Like, there was kind of times when, there was kind of some hope infused in the program. And I think, obviously it didn't happen as much as fans or as Miles would have wanted, but I think that just added element of Miles potentially last game, and I think that's a pretty big deal.
You know, Chris, have you gotten the sense from anybody that you've talked to in terms of fans, anybody within the media, in your own mind anywhere, that what happened on Sunday really in any way changed anybody's mind, though, about what should or could end up happening with Miles?
No, probably not. I mean, anything that would potentially change people's minds, I think, would happen in Chicago. I think the Iowa win, as spectacular as it was and as cool as it was to watch, I mean, the Nebraska's still 16-15. They finished 13th in the Big Ten. This is the fourth time in 5 years they're going to be playing in the opening game because they finished in the final four of the conference. Like, I think that, as spectacular as it was, you kind of take a step back. And no one that I've talked to really has changed their opinion about Tim and his tenure because of the one game. I think that in general, the sentiment's still kind of there. I think, though, that there were a lot of people that were really happy that it happened that way. Really happy that he kind of got, if he ends up getting let go, that he got one more win at Pinnacle Bank Arena, and that he was able to kind of go out in that way. Because you think back of, the Mike Riley era, that was kind of embarrassing. Oof. The last game that he coached. And with Bo, you never really knew. And so it was kind of it almost tied a bow on, you kind of give him a nice send off if they end up firing him. And I think people will kind of remember that.
Chris, the big injury for Amir Harris, who had a great game too. I mean, it just seems like another example of anytime they take a step forward, there's at least two steps back. I mean, just in your opinion, from the last time we saw Nebraska Rutgers, they were pretty healthy. Nebraska was. What do you expect tomorrow? I mean, what should you expect tomorrow?
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of back in the day when you would play in a AAU tournament or just some summer tournament with your high school basketball team, and you had three guys who were at camp, and so you had seven guys to play, and you just kind of went out there and tried to see what you can do. Kind of where they're at this point. Like, there's only eight people they can play, and two or three of those guys are walk-ons. And what I expect is just kind of stuff we've not seen before. I think that Miles is going to probably pull some things out of his back pocket that Nebraska's not done. Maybe they throw out a 2-3 zone so that they don't get, foul trouble. Obviously they need a ton from Glenn Watson and James Palmer. Miles said today, they need 50 out of those two guys. And I think it might even need to be a little bit higher than that. So we'll see a lot of Thor. We'll see a lot of Johnny. We'll probably see some Brady Hyman. If people get in foul trouble, we'll see some Justin Costello. And this is where we're at in the basketball season, where they're down to just kind of the bare bones. I think that the Amir Harris injury is something where, you never really knew when this season was really over. But even whenever you got the idea of maybe they can make a run, maybe they can win a couple games in Chicago, then Amir Harris gets injured and you're never mind. I'm not saying that they're going to get blown out or they couldn't win one or two, but it just, you're right. Every time they take a step forward, every time that there's any sort of good news or any positivity, there's another bad story. There's another injury. There's another suspension. There's just something going on. So I think that people were happy for about 12 hours and then found out that Amir Harris was on crutches. And so it's kind of the way the season went. Was you hoped that it'd be better, but obviously didn't really turn out that way.
Chris, I was thinking about this morning. The kind of revenge factor against Rutgers. I mean, that was a pretty embarrassing game for Nebraska the first time around. I mean, do you feel like you could make a case they could use that a little bit as motivation? I mean, that was right at the point where the things really started to come apart for this team.
Yeah, I think that you could probably make that case for the first two games, too. I mean, Rutgers was kind of the point where everyone turned to each other and was like, oh, this is worse than we thought, isn't it? Because the Michigan State game, obviously, Nebraska had a chance and they kind of fell short, but they basically turned that loss into two losses when they lost to Rutgers. And Rutgers is Rutgers, so people don't really respect them. And so the fact that they lost made it even worse. that was Rutgers. And so, yeah, I think that you can kind of have some revenge factor toward it. But you could also make the case for the Maryland game, too. Like, I think I consider the Maryland game at Pinnacle Bank Arena to be rock bottom. I mean, they shot 21% from the floor. You know, Glenn Waffen goes 0 for 10, and he's shooting in an empty arena after the game. And so I think that both of those games are kind of revenge games in a way, which is good because, you know, you need more motivation, I guess. But the problem is it's hard to kind of take – you can be – yeah, want revenge as bad as anybody else, but if you don't play well and you don't have a lot of players, then it kind of matters, but not really. You know, you still actually have to play the game.
Chris Eddy joining us from the Omaha World Herald. Nebraska opens up Big Ten tournament play tomorrow at 5:30 against Rutgers. When you do look at the seniors and the emotion, just that game alone, that comeback, and I know you even said that you feel this is a game that people will remember for a very long time, and that's where, once again, I think that the players' efforts come into play. Having that on senior day, in your opinion, what was bigger, the fact that it did happen on senior day, or is there a little bit of that Iowa element to it as well?
I think both. I think that's why people remember it even more, is like, you know, potentially Tim Miles' last game, unbelievable comeback, senior night. Like, there were so many different elements that came into it. And it was one of those things where, you know, Glenn Watson and James Palmer, with about 2 minutes left, just decided, like, all right, it's only going to be us. Like, we're just going to shoot the rest of the game, see how many we can make. And they made 9 in a row. And so, like, I thought that was really cool that those two guys kind of got those moments, because both of those players have kind of had some hard spots in their college career. You know, Glenn Watson, I don't think has had the success in terms of wins that he would have wanted when he committed to Nebraska. James Palmer obviously struggled in Miami, and then he got here, and he's kind of gone through a lot, especially recently with the passing of his grandfather. And so to watch those two guys come down and just like reckless abandon, just chucking up threes and making them, and knowing that, like, this is the last time that fans are going to be able to see that, that's what made it so cool. And to see them afterwards, how happy they were, and how happy, you know, Isaac Copeland was for them, and Roby wearing Copeland's jersey. Like, there were just so many elements of it that made it really memorable. And I think I think fans will always kind of hold this in high regard. But because of the game, because of the comeback, because of who scored a ton of points, and because of it potentially being Tim Miles' last game, I think the program, I think the players, the coaches, the student managers, they're going to remember that game and hold it tighter to their heart than I think fans will, just because it just probably meant a whole lot to them.
Chris Eddy, once again, covering the Husker basketball beat. Now, are you heading out to Chicago? Or are you already there?
Yeah, I'll fly out tomorrow morning. I'll rise with the sun. Always fun to do in an airplane.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know,
wake up call,
daylight savings time screws with that a little bit, so yeah, you'll be all right.
Yeah, I mean, I can't complain. I'll be there. So, yeah, I fly out tomorrow. I will be there for as long as Nebraska's there.
All right, we'll keep up to date with everything going on. Of course, Chris Eddy with the Omaha World covering the Husker basketball. Be appreciated, Chris. Safe travels, man.
Yep, thanks. See
you. You got it, sir. All right, rehab report today. We'll focus on Amir Harris's knee injury, just the latest in a long line for the Big Red. Do you want to touch just to kind of broadly on the Big Ten tournament, though, next on AM 590?
Yes, Pinamon.
Yeah, you know, Nick, speaking generally about the Big Ten tournament this year, I feel like there are some years where this league goes in and you've got a lot of, you know, uncertainty about who's making the NCAA tournament, you know, what seeds are potentially up for grabs. Does it feel to you like maybe things are a bit more settled from the Big Ten perspective than, I guess, what they normally are in a typical year? I mean, you look at it, Michigan, Michigan State, Purdue, Wisconsin, Maryland, Iowa, despite Iowa not playing very well. They did enough early on to where I feel like they're locks. And then you've got Indiana, Ohio State, Minnesota, that are kind of in that category. It's like, maybe they get in, but I mean, are any of those teams like, I mean, how worthy do we feel like Indiana truly is of an NCAA tournament berth at this point? I mean, or is like, you know, are we all going to be like, oh, what a screw job to the Big Ten if Ohio State doesn't get into the field? I just feel like it's kind of like, well, if they get in, great, but I feel like the bulk of the, you know, the real interesting stories in the Big Ten are already in. All those teams I rattled off, I think you look at all the bracketologies out there, almost everybody has all of those teams in, and very, very little danger of any of them falling out.
I will honestly say the way that this thing has sort of shook out in the second half. Now, mind you, you saw more of this collectively throughout the season last year, but in the last month, like, I look at Ohio State, they're not good. It's not. Indiana, they're not good.
Yeah.
I mean, I can make a pretty significant line. I mean, even, okay, you can look at the Iowa Hawkeyes at 21-10. Like, they're playing terrible basketball right now. As much as the overall season has been a little bit better for the Big Ten, not a little bit, a lot better for the Big Ten than it was last year, I think it's pretty top-heavy again. I think it, you start looking at that cut line maybe just below Iowa or Minnesota. I mean, does anybody look at Ohio State saying, yeah, they could win a game?
I think they're going to get, I think in the end, the Big Ten will get seven in. Because
I think they will.
Indiana, Ohio State play each other right in the opening round, and I feel like whoever wins that one is probably going to push themselves on the right side. Now, should they be in favor of somebody else?
Yeah, but like Minnesota at 19-12. Nah. Like, it's not a great team.
Yeah.
I mean, the way that Iowa's playing right now at 21-10, like, I'm not going to say it's not as bad as it was last year, but it's pretty top heavy again.
Yeah.
It really is.
I mean, there was talk at one point about this team maybe getting nine teams in. That obviously has fizzled. I think six for sure.
And just
maybe
because
seven.
The bubble is really, really weak, really, really soft, and that's why. But as far as the Big Ten making this gigantic step forward compared to last year, I don't really see it the way that this thing is kind of ending.
Watch the Pac-12. Washington's the only lock out there, and if they don't win the tournament, they're going to squeeze somebody who's completely undeserving in. But if they do win it, probably only going to get one team into the dance. So watch out for that. Going to have the rehab report next. Talk about Amir Harris's knee injury on AM 590.
ESPN tomorrow.
Time for the Rehab Report, presented by Athletes Training Center, building and rebuilding today's athletes on AM 590 ESPN Omaha.
At time on a Tuesday, it's our Rehab Report, presented to you by Athletes Training Center Sports Performance and Physical Therapy. You can check them out in the area in two locations. They're in West Omaha, 138th and Industrial Road, and also in Papillion Highway 370 and 84th Street. As we welcome in Travis Manners of Athletes Training Center, talking about meniscus injuries as Amir Harris will likely miss the Big Ten tournament, announced yesterday by Tim Miles with what was called a meniscus injury. We didn't get the severity of it, but Travis, when you look at the major knee injuries, we talk a lot about ACLs, PCLs, MCLs. When the meniscus is in play, what are we looking at, and what do you get from an injury like that?
Well, what the meniscus is a pad of cartilage that sits in between our two knee bones, and so part of our sits on top of our tibia, and it basically is for a couple different functions for our knee. Shock absorption is one of its main functions, but also it helps with some of the stability of the knee in addition to the ligaments. And so, but when we think of it more medically, we think long term from a wear and tear standpoint on the knee. If people have meniscus problems down the road, will they have ultimate problems with arthritis and some of the other advancements of knee pathology as time goes on? And so for a young man in his situation, when I hear a report that they're talking about shutting them down, doing surgery, you know, it's one of those things from the timing of things and where they see the tear. And it just kind of leads me to believe that they're seeing a tear that might be in a fixable area of the meniscus. And not all of our meniscus is fixable because not all of our meniscus has blood supply that will allow it to heal. And so that's why we hear people having meniscus tears that have surgery and they're back in a short amount of time, in a 2 or 3 week time frame, and back into sports. And so for him, you know, they are looking at it from the sense that in addition to the ones that that don't heal or potentially don't have the capacity to heal, not all of those need surgery right away. And so sometimes they'll let people kind of work through something like that. And so the fact that they're not looking at allowing him to kind of work through also leads me to believe that the injury that they're seeing to the meniscus might be in an area that they have a chance to heal. Because, again, long term, they're looking at this as a freshman in college who has a lot of miles yet to put on his legs. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, if they can spare the cushion in between his knee, it's going to give him a much durable and healthier knee going on the rest of his life and keep him out of things from a knee replacement that might be happening a little sooner if they ended up having to take a piece of the meniscus out from that standpoint. So that's kind of where my mind goes when I see this report of just the timing and how they're kind of advancing with the medical recommendations for him.
Yeah, and Travis, you know, we don't know specifically, I guess, during the game where this injury occurred. We know he played all the way to the end, actually ended up hitting the game winner for Nebraska. I mean, is it possible that this injury occurred earlier on and just, you know, didn't really feel the full effects of it until after the game, later that night kind of thing, and was able to kind of keep going?
Yeah, yeah, that is definitely possible. The other thing that's possible, too, is he might have it might have been there for a little while and been in a stable position. And sometimes as we're dynamic and moving, obviously the knee is rotating, flexing, extending. It's going to have the chance to maybe catch a little bit of a lip of a tear that otherwise would have been in the right place and stable. And then it starts to kind of dislodge or move a little bit, and then they become symptomatic. And so the injury itself might not have happened at all during the game. And especially when you don't see a point in time where the player goes down, and there's a time where that individual is being tended to on the court, and then they ultimately leave the court and come back. Something like this might have been around for a little bit and just unknown to him, just because it wasn't symptomatic.
The procedure, I know a lot with these are, and you kind of talked about some of the just parts of this knee and how they can be impacted with. Is it the common procedure, and you could tell me more about this, obviously, is the common procedure usually a scope when it does come to this, or is there a lot more that does come to it? I mean, is that kind of what you see with the meniscus a lot, is getting the arthroscopic surgery?
Yeah, it is typically an arthroscopic surgery. There is there are certain parts of the meniscus that are harder to access if the surgeon's intent is to fix the meniscus. And so some of those fixations can be done intra-articularly, where they can go in with the scope, visualize everything well, get the instruments in there and have a good repair and utilize that method. There's some that are more on the periphery of the meniscus that are harder to get to from a scope aspect and easier to get through a small open incision on the outside of the knee. But I would say, generally speaking, more and more of them can be done arthroscopically. Certainly if they go in and just debride the area, clean it up, remove the piece that's torn, because it's not in an area that's going to end up healing for the individual. Those are often done only arthroscopically, as they don't typically need to access them from the outside. Usually it's the outside peripheral part that has the best chance of healing. And again, some of them can be gotten to angle-wise from inside the knee, and then some of them need to be approached from the outside of the knee. All depends on where, as well as the surgeon's comfort level. But for the most part, we do see it arthroscopically.
Travis, outlook for Mir Harris, obviously being, you know, just a freshman for Nebraska, got a long career in front of him.
Yeah.
Pretty good, full recovery down the line in most of these cases?
Yeah, you know, if you look at best case scenario is that he has a mild tear that doesn't consume too much of his meniscus. They can go in arthroscopically, clean out that area, and ultimately he's going to have a pretty short recovery. Like I said, some people are back in a 2 or 3 week time frame after something like that. Long term, you know, or worst case scenario, this individual has kind of a complex tear that they're seeing, and ultimately requires some form of surgery that that has some point of fixation, some surgical anchors or arrows that they'll put in the area. And ultimately, that is something of a longer rehab. So that individual is going to be non-weight-bearing for a period of time. They're going to go through a process where they're just kind of working on range of motion and getting their hip and thigh strong, but they're just not able to put weight on it. Eventually, after 6-8 weeks, being able to put more weight, starting to bend, flex. And then ultimately, that's going to be in that kind of 3 to 4 month recovery time frame. And even in best case scenarios, when the intention is to go in and give that athlete's knee the benefit of the doubt with fixing it, because the area just doesn't have that good supply, sometimes those areas don't heal. Ultimately, they need to go back in a while down the road and ultimately debride the area instead of try to fix it. And so not all of them are just a one-and-done surgery. When we talk about the fixing of them, sometimes a repeat needs to be done if they don't heal. But like I said, the surgeon's intent is always to maximize that cushion so that the individual has a long, durable knee for years on end.
Talking to Travis Manners, our rehab report presented to you by Athletes Training Center here on AM 590. Travis, this is another thing with the meniscus that I've heard before, and I'd love for you to sort of give us your thoughts on this, and that is for people that are active that maybe get some knee soreness throughout their life and don't necessarily get it checked out. I've heard more times than not that it is typically your meniscus, and it's something that you can kind of go through as long as you can handle the pain. Is there some truth to that? Like, say, if I have knee soreness, mm-hmm. yet it's not like that really bad pain like an ACL where you know something's just not right, but there's some soreness that very well likely could be your meniscus, and that padding, as you kind of talked about, is just kind of grinding down?
Yeah, it definitely could be a meniscus, and oftentimes there's really two things that can bother a knee often when we have a scenario like that where we have somebody that's kind of active recreationally experiencing some knee pain, but it's not debilitating, it's not locking, catching on them from that standpoint. Mm-hmm. Having some issues with the patella and the kneecap and how it sits and how it tracks, what we call patellofemoral syndrome is a possibility, but certainly a meniscus is the next place where our mind starts to go. And so, because ultimately, usually if a meniscus has some tearing, especially on the inner part of it, that's not necessarily always unstable to where it's bothersome. It's an injury that if somebody is lightly active, that's probably not going to affect them a whole lot. If they have a strenuous workout or a strenuous physical activity for a duration of time, their knee might swell, and they just can't get past that ability of having kind of this up and down knee swelling. Hard to really bend down and get down to pick stuff up off the ground and then get in that deep flexion position is another sign that it could be something to do with the meniscus. But yeah, it is something that like many areas of our body, the more active we are, it has the opportunity to have some wear and tear. And at some point it crosses a line of so much wear and tear that it can become symptomatic. But as you mentioned, and what I mentioned before, not all meniscus tears need surgery. And oftentimes if the surgeon looks at it with or without a scan, they'll kind of let people go if it's not going to affect the long-term outcome of their knee health over a period of time. And so that's usually how the recommendations go when we see something like this in the clinic.
And Travis, you did mention something that I do find interesting too, when it does come to knee injuries. With the meniscus, would you ever experience that sort of that lockup feeling that you
Absolutely.
Do?
Okay. Yeah, definitely. And that basically what that is that, you know, when you have a meniscus tear that becomes from a kind of stable position to an unstable position, the meniscus can almost flip, a part of it can flip up onto itself. And when it does, that will prohibit the knee to bend. And so it kind of gets stuck in this. Typically, it's in some type of a semi-flexed position to where the individual may be able to flex it a little bit more, but they can't get it unlocked straight. And that's kind of the biggest thing. And those tend to settle down on a regular basis, but tend to have a reoccurrence that will happen with them. And so usually the recommendation, if you have a locked knee, even if it does unlock over a period of time, is to have that area removed, because ultimately, you know, it if you don't know when it's going to happen, that can be pretty debilitating, especially not knowing what you're going to be doing when it would lock up again.
Yeah, and as far as, and we'll kind of end on this, as far as the difference between maybe having the knee scoped to the full surgery and just the varying degrees of this injury, rehab-wise, physical therapy-wise, compared to the ACLs, MCLs, and the other knee injuries, how does it compare, and is it maybe a little less taxing on someone?
Definitely less taxing on someone. There's not as much disruption of the joint. Even if they go in and have to surgically fix a meniscus, it doesn't have the trauma that's associated with an ACL. With ACL, you know, for most of our athletes, they're not going to have a cadaver graft. They're going to have their own tissue. So you're going to have a donor site that's trying to heal. You're going to have bone tunnels that ultimately the surgeon's going to drill into the two bones to create the path for the new reconstructed ligament. That is going to have trauma to the knee. Usually the activity that creates a ligament disruption is going to be far more volatile than what causes just a meniscus injury. And so you can have concomitant strains, soft tissue, bruising, bone bruising that can happen with the ACL. So all those concomitant things factor into a longer recovery with that. Even the worst case scenario on most meniscus is that the person might be out in that 3 to 4 month time frame, whereas ACL, we're not even, you know, we're just getting into jogging and light kind of functional activity at that point in time with some of those individuals. And so definitely a fraction of the time when it's the worst case scenario of the meniscus.
Our rehab report once again brought to you by Athletes Training Center Sports Performance and Physical Therapy. You can check them out in two locations in the area. They are in West Omaha, 138th and Industrial Road, and also in Papillion Highway, 370 and 84th Street. And if you have any questions on anything that might be bothering you or anything on the topics that we have discussed, feel free to reach out to Travis. You can email him, tmanners@athletestrainingcenter.com. Athletes Training Center, building and rebuilding today's athletes. Travis, really appreciate your information. As always, have a great week.
Yeah, you guys do the same. Thanks for your time.
You bet, sir. All right, coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, big story, of course, tonight. UNO playing for a berth in the NCAA tournament. They take on North Dakota State. Tony Boone will join us in about 20 minutes, preview all the action from up in Sioux Falls. Coming up here on AM 590.
ESPN 1.